This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the W12 podcast. I'm Ben Platt. Thanks for tuning in and listening to another episode. A weird away. We get through a podcast after a win, which makes everything a lot easier. Dunk, you're probably going to ruin it at some point, I know, but we'll get to that in a minute. Lots I want to get through. Let's quickly start by seeing who we've got on the pod this week. So obviously we've got Duncan. You okay, mate?
No, I'm literally sweating my tits off at the minute, but apart from that, I'm fine.
It's far too hot today to do anything.
It is far too hot. No, I feel like that bloke from Indiana Jones, where his face just melts.
But the letters you delivering, like, soaked in your sweat this morning.
Yeah, literally, like, they was like, I hold up my arm and they're literally sticking to my arm. I had like half a magazine stuck to my arm. So I apologise to whoever house that went into.
Fair enough. We've also got Chris. Welcome back, mate. Again, you good?
Yeah, all good, boys. So I was saying before we jumped on, very happy with the win at the weekend, and we can enjoy those 3 points for 2 weeks, given it's international break.
We've also got a pod debutant on. We've got young George Sharp. George, welcome, mate. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks, Ben. Yeah, cheers for having me on.
That's all right. That's okay. You good, though?
Yeah, I'm good.
School all right?
Yeah, so it's going all right, apart from boiling heats in the uniform. But apart from that, it's all good.
Is there many QPR fans in your school at all? Or do you get a lot of stick or what?
I think there's one other, but I always get like a lot of stick. Like, especially last year, how we're losing every single game. Every day I get reminded of it. So that's great. There's quite a few Brentford fans for some reason.
Is there? Do you give them stick? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, bus stop in Hounslow, I always say to them as they're walking around.
Cool. Okay, lads. Well, thanks for coming on. Let's get straight stuck in to Middlesbrough. What a win, really. I think, you know, it's easy to say that Borough weren't out of form and, you know, they're struggling down the bottom of the league, as you say, Dunk. But I still think going to Borough and producing a performance like that and, you know, coming away with a clean sheet is a fantastic result. I think we'll all agree that what Ainsworth is trying to do, I think we can all see what he's trying to do, right? I think, I'm not sure too many people would disagree. Whether he can execute it in the long term, I don't know. But again, Saturday was another demonstration of what he's trying to do. And I thought there were a lot of really good performances. And I thought we fully deserved the win. George, don't know if you want to kick off.
Yeah, I'll kick it off if you want. Well, I thought,
being a debutant, what was your views on the game?
I thought it was a positive performance. It was everything that Ainsworth promised us, I guess, with the passion, with everyone fighting for the badge. And I guess you could say it was a tight game in terms of chances, but we just took it, something we haven't really been doing. We took our chances. And I guess you could say if we did that against Southampton and Ipswich, we would have got a result. But we took our chances, and certainly more positive compared to Watford first day of the season.
Absolutely, absolutely. Doug, any different views? You're like the devil on the shoulder. I know something's coming.
No, I'm just saying, like, obviously I'd said last week that the performances have been getting better, results hadn't. So they're like, last week it happened. We got the performance and the result. But obviously the caveat is Borough were poor, and they did miss quite a few chances. It's kind of like George said, we were clinical, they weren't. When Begovic is man of the match, it does show that we weren't dominant, we weren't in control as much as the scoreline might suggest. But you take any kind of win you can get, especially in this level and with how the season could pan out. So I'm over the moon with the win.
Begovic being mad at the match, he was. He made a few saves. I don't think he made any absolute world-class saves. I don't think there are any that possibly shouldn't have made. They're all straight at him, pretty much. You know, I mean, I don't know. They created quite a few chances, but I thought we hit them on the counter really well. I thought we used Smith really well on the right. Kenneth Powell on the left. Really good game. And I think it was always going to be whoever got that first goal, I thought was always going to probably go on to get the win, being where Borough are and the morale and stuff. I always thought fairly comfortable watching the game that we were going to see it through. Chris, I don't know if you've got any different.
Yeah, I mean, it's how good is it to think that like when we're ahead in the game that we felt comfortable. I mean, great time to score. A few minutes before half time, both managers are probably going in thinking, okay, 0-0 at half time, what do I need to change or what do I need to tweak? And I mean, unbelievable goal. Like when you put in the chat that it's like one of the best goals you've ever seen, like I didn't know what I was going to see until we saw the video.
And you were
like,
then,
oh my God.
I got caught up in the moment. My shirt was off. I was running around. I thought, yeah. I mean, it was still a good goal.
Wasn't Chris claiming credit for it in the group chat?
Last week I was saying Dizel needs to shoot more. Admittedly, I did say when he's 18 yards out on his right foot, but if he wants to do it from like 25, 30 with his left, then feel free. Superb goal. Again, timing of the second goal, that's a killer. Like they seeing the chances back and you know they haven't scored, but there were a lot of times where you were kind of like, how have they not scored from there? And I'm not saying they were, like massive, massive chances, but again, Begovic standing up, doing really well. I mean, I know Jack's not on the pod with us tonight, but it's gone through his feed just to bring up some stats so he can still be credited. But Begovic has made the most saves in the league so far this season. His save percentage is sixth highest in the league. And I'm not sure how much we'll touch on Dieng, but Dieng's worst in the league at 31%. It's too early to say, have we made an upgrade at goalkeeper, because the ages are obviously miles apart, so longevity. But if you've got, let's say, whatever it was, a mil and a half in the bank, and we got someone on a free who's really experienced, like you weigh that up on the scales, we're better off in the short term, at least.
I think you're better off. I don't know. My opinion is, with where we are, we're going to need a keeper that's going to need to make saves, right? I just think that's the reality. Yeah. Right, that's and I think that shot stopping, I think he's as good as we could get. I think his kicking annoys me a lot. It frustrates me. It doesn't. His kicking's so poor.
But we're not playing progressive football from the back, so he doesn't need to be good at kicking.
That's
the difference, isn't it? Like, he is an Ainsworth style goalkeeper. He's there to like hit it long when he needs to. Play a simple pass if he wants to or can do if the opportunity is there, but he's not going to be there trying to play like a 30, 40 yard ball to like the right back, the left back, trying to like, do you know what I mean? He's there to be a goalie first and foremost, which I felt Senny for us under different managers wasn't. He was almost there to be the first line of the starting of a move.
He's not going to make many. I just don't, you know, think about the mistakes Senny made last year. Like,
Don't jinx it.
I'll shut up. George, what do you think? You like Begovic?
Yeah, I like his shot stopping. Like, I was always a fan of Senny because I love passing football and everything like that, building from the back. Perfect. That may be why I'm, and as you said, anti Ainsworth. But Begovic,
I haven't said that.
but Begovic with his distribution is just, we don't need to play that passing. Like, you could see that as soon as Dickie went, the ball playing defender, as Ainsworth said, you could tell that we weren't going to be playing out the back. So as soon as Begovic came in, I suppose you could call it a win, getting 1.5, 2 million for Dieng, getting a free keeper. Good.
Yeah. Yeah, I just wanted to also touch on, just when you mentioned Dizel, Chris, I know we spoke about him a few times. I, whilst his form is much better, by the way, and absolutely fantastic goal, great tackle, you know, last minute, everything just seemed to go right for him, didn't it, on Saturday after he got it in the head. But
was that all he needed? He needed a hit in the head.
Still not fully convinced he's going. I don't know. I still need a bit more convincing. Like, I know that maybe Ainsworth got him going. Perhaps, you know, there's a tidy footballer in there. But I don't know.
I think we need. Go on.
I was going to say, I think it's telling that Dizel's performances have upped since Colback's been in the team. And I think that's the kind of experience midfielder Steph didn't give us and didn't support with Dizel. I feel like Colback has allowed Dizel to kind of have that little bit more expression and not have to worry about as much of the defensive work or the tactical work. I think Colback is organising that midfield.
It kind of feels a bit like Ainsworth's gone, let's just move him out of the way a little bit. Because having him in that centre midfield, one thing about Borough, which I really enjoyed, was the fact that we actually won that centre midfield battle pretty much all game. Field and Colback won a midfield battle for the majority of the game, which is something that I've not seen QPR do for a long time. And I think that's what you get when you know, harsh on Dizel, but, you know, he just kind of feels like he's moved further forward, he's out of the way a little bit. He's not he doesn't need to get back as much. Not every tackle is important. If he does something, he's a bit further up the pitch. I don't know if I'm being harsh, but I don't know.
No, I think the Steph Johansson bit is a good thing to talk about, because if we think it was always Field plus one of Dizel or Johansson, so Dizel's rare. Oh, Jack will know the stats, but like how many times those two would have played together, I don't think it would have happened a lot. So therefore, and because they kind of know they're competing for the same spot, because we used to play two, he wouldn't have got a huge amount of, like, I guess, leadership and help on the pitch. You see what I mean? Whereas now it's three of them in there. Obviously, Colback can do a more defensive role. He's shown he can still get forward. But yeah, Dizel got that little bit more, maybe like 10% more license to move around, to roam, to get forward. And yeah, then for he probably thinks, okay, I don't need to be thinking, do I need to be level with Field all the time? Do I need to be defending the runner who's going to burst through our back three, back four, etc.? But yeah, he needs to show it for like a sort of a 10-game run. This is a very positive sign that he is getting better and in much better form than he ever has been, but can it be long term? Because we need it to be.
He's just got more space on the pitch now. And I always used to say to myself, what does Dizel actually do? And if anything, I'm still thinking that. And no, I don't see what he really does on the football pitch. Like, Ainsworth's kind of thrown him in a more attacking role. And I guess you could say he's kind of thrived in it. But apart from, like, at the start of Ipswich, I thought he was ducking out of tackles and everything like that. So I get there's a Dizel hype train, but I don't really see how it's that big of a deal, because I don't really see what he does on the pitch much.
I agree. I think, I don't know, I just think he needs to do more. I appreciate he did do more on Saturday. Great. But he just needs to do it on a more consistent basis. All people are on that. I'd like to see Willock play in that role, but I don't know whether he could be as disciplined or I don't know. I mean, it's probably a whole other conversation about what the hell has happened with Willock and with the window. We'll get onto that in a sec. Just quickly want to touch on Paul Smith. Do you know what? I always, you know, you've got your Easies and your Chairs and your Freemans, that type of player. I obviously love that type of player, right? But for me, a player like Bright or Smith that just run at people and just take them on and they skank it through the letter. Like they manage to come out of it. I always think that is just, I always like that type of player and enjoy that type of player as much as the others. And I think we were all wondering what type of Paul Smith we were going to get, but early signs are good, right? He seems to fit into that right wing back role really well. It's not an easy role to play either on a football pitch, getting up and down that pitch. So yeah, I thought he was excellent on Saturday. He tore that left back apart, literally apart. And yeah, I thought he was excellent. Dunk, I don't know if you
Like, I'm not going to beat around the bush. When we were linked to getting back, I wasn't impressed initially with the signing. I thought like he didn't tear up much when he was here last time. I didn't necessarily think he'd done a lot, but the signs so far, I have been impressed with him, especially like in an attacking role. I feel like he gives us an outlet down that right hand side. He's constantly a threat, and obviously he's constantly trying to get balls into the box. My only worry is against a better like left sided team. Obviously, the Middlesbrough's left back is new to the league and he's a bit dodgy. I just feel like defensively he still can be caught out like he was against Southampton. I think going forward, he's bang on it. He just needs that bit of support from Ozzy when he's in defensive mode. That's my only kind of negative on Smith. Just needs to work on that defensive side of his game to get that role going really well.
Yeah, and I think that's probably just going to show in the quality of teams we play against, right? Like if he's really good against 12, 14 teams in the league, and the other ones we're like, okay, maybe defensively you could improve a bit, or the left back's of higher quality, then this is a more difficult game for you. I think we take it, right? Like I get the impression he's a good player to manage. What I mean by that is his attitude's right. He's not going to go, oh, I don't want to play right wing back. I came here to play left forward because that's what I did at Leighton Orient, and I was cutting in all the time and scoring bangers from 30 yards. I don't imagine that's his attitude. I imagine his attitude is like the Jamie Mackie mold of, look, I'll play wherever you want and I'll do whatever job you need. And if I need to run for 90 minutes, I'll do it. And that's ultimately what we, half the season last season, we were on this pod talking about we need characters and we need the right people in the squad, and he demonstrates that, in my opinion.
Also pace,
yeah, 100%.
And also it doesn't matter if he loses it sometimes, because that will happen, right? Or if he has the old bad game here and there, because that will also happen. Like wingers, that's what happens. But just having him there as an outlet and get us up the pitch and do some damage, you know, even if it doesn't, even it's sometimes he's a bit too quick and he's, you know, he's got to wait and maybe the chance is gone. But I thought at Southampton he was good. I thought Ipswich was a bit tough. I don't know whether he suits an away game more. It's difficult because we've only really had one game, haven't we, at home. But anyway, I'm looking forward to also seeing how he develops. George, have you got?
He looks like he's matured a lot since last time he was here. Like when I first saw the signing, like Dunk, I was like, oh God, backstep. Because like when he was with us before, he was just a pacey player who'd fight for the badge. And I suppose you could say that's a typical Ainsworth signing. The one thing I'm worried about is, well, two things really. One, you mentioned on it, I don't think he's a home sort of player, because Loftus Road, it's so compact. I've never really been a fan of wide players at Loftus Road, because you're just on top of each other. Do you get what I mean? Like, yeah, that's what I think. That's why I think Chair and Wilk always did so well at home, because they could just free roam around the middle. And the second point is, we haven't bought in a right back in the window. So against these better teams, I think I've never really been a fan of Kakai, if I'm being honest with you. I don't think many of us really are. But I think with Smith not being the best defensively, I think he could get caught out a couple of times against like the Leicesters or the better teams with these wingers who will just attack you.
I think it's important that we shift across at the back, isn't it? When he goes forward, that we turn, you know, we move across. We've been caught out a few times not doing that. Ozzy's an odd one. I've never been a massive Ozzy fan at all, but he, I don't know, maybe someone would put their arm around him, show him some real, like not buying a right back, I imagine would have big confidence for him. I don't know. He can demonstrate it for like 20 minutes, half an hour in a game, kind of, where you can go, oh, here we go. And then, I don't know, he just sort of then drifts out of a game or makes a mistake, or the ball sort of becomes hot potato.
He reminds me a bit of like Dizel. They both kind of switch off. It's like they can't focus for a full 90 minutes. Like every so often, the game just goes past them.
Yeah, and you need that moment not to kill us, right?
Like, yeah.
I think he's the kind of player that one in four games, he'll look poor or like really bad. But can you get away with, can you get away with that one if the other three he's competent and maybe one of them he's good, where people turn around and then Twitter changes and you're like, tell you what, like he is, he can do a job here. And yeah, because I think that's what, that's the position we're in. Like, we don't have anybody else to play there, do we? So it's just he has to be, he has to be that, and he has to be good enough for the games we need him.
I think it shows our backwards step if Ozzie Kakai is your starting fullback, though. Like, if you think about it, I've just, yeah, I don't know, a couple of years ago, if you had told me that Kakai is going to be our number one right back, I wouldn't have believed you.
I guess he isn't our right back, though, is he? Because we don't play with a right back. I don't know, that would be the, maybe if we're only playing, if this is the system that Ainsworth wants to play, I'd imagine that Kakai would move to right wing back if, I don't know, would he? Or Doma?
Well, who knows what Ainsworth's trying to be. I never thought he'd have the tactical mind to think of this, to be honest. The not knocking it long. And like, I think you can tell already I'm not the biggest fan, but...
We'll, you haven't indicated that much, George, in the last
season. We'll get on to that in a second. We'll get on to that.
You've got that massive poster of Ainsworth behind you as well.
That's his dartboard.
Yeah.
Lads, the window wanted to get whether you were happy with what we did, in and out, if there was any, obviously we know there's gaps, but what would be your sort of rating, I guess, for our window, Chris? What was your reflection?
I mean, I think our expectations weren't very high, were they? We all understood what we had to play with, i.e. nothing. And it was trying to bring money in. A few people have kind of mentioned it on Twitter, and you kind of try to go player for player in terms of the real optimists. Be like, oh, we've upgraded the squad. I think in leadership and characters we have, yeah. So yeah, my expectations were low. That's kind of six or a seven. It's kind of met them. The fact we didn't bring in any striker is probably the disappointment. I mean, obviously we can still bring someone in on free, and we'll probably talk about that. But not just having another option is probably the issue. But yeah, on deadline day, I'd never expected us to do anything.
So well, that Chris, wasn't. Can I ask you a question, mate? I've been thinking about this.
Yeah.
And it comes off the back of something that I'll go on. But if I said to you, I guess that obviously as a squad, it's not as big, right? I get that, right?
Mm.
But man for man, so would you, going into this season, would you rather have Dieng or Begovic in your goal? Going into this season, who would you rather have? Be honest.
Is this going down to management as well, though? Because every player plays differently for different managers, doesn't it?
Shut up. No. If you were the manager, who would you rather have in?
I mean, we might be like bearing on recency bias, but I think you'd say Begovic based on what we sort of saw at Dieng last year.
Yeah. Would you rather have Cook, Fox, Dunn, and Jake Clark-Salter, where he was here last season, over Balogun and Dickey last season? Would you rather have Cook and Fox, yeah, I guess, as your alternatives, right?
Yeah,
Going into this season, would you rather have Tolbak in that set? Tell me who else you'd rather have in that set midfield with Field. Would
well,
you
if it's him against Tim? Johansson, then that's an easy one,
what
then,
about
isn't
Tim?
It?
Irabunim or
Tolbak?
Well,
no, that's Tim.
Yeah. You know, Sinclair getting playing every week, which he definitely wasn't. Right, last season, he's going to be our number two striker this season. I mean, you take him over some of the players we had last season playing up there, right?
We take him over Tyler Roberts, don't you?
Well, yeah. You know, Paul Smith on the right. I mean, I know it's a bit, it's obviously early, but what I'm getting at is that this 11, our first team this season, I don't think is it not better? That's my question.
Like a team similar time this point last season.
I don't know. It's just a question, mate. I'm just, you know.
If you asked me the 11 that I was watching this day last year, I'd definitely be saying last year. compared to like the future squad of what we've got now. Because obviously, look how amazing we were playing. Everything was gelling perfectly. Like, great attacking football. Like, summer, pure kind of QPR summer vibes were going on. Then we saw the rest of the season totally capitulate. So you saw what we're missing, and then we've replaced that. So, yeah, I mean, we're not in a horrific position, are we? I don't think so. In terms of the squad.
Not unless injuries happen, we are at upshit creek, aren't we?
Yeah.
But we do have injury crisis every single season, so that will happen at some point.
George, what's your ins and outs? Are you happy?
I guess you could call it a success in some ways. One thing that annoyed me was we obviously had no money to spend, yet we spent $625,000 on Taylor Richards, who's nowhere to be seen at the moment. Like, if you think about it, that's equivalent to another team's £4-5 million signing, and he's not even on the bench at the moment. So if you think we could have bought in a right back, and I think we just needed a nippy striker, someone who could come on instead of Armstrong and force their defence back, because as soon as he comes off, all they do is drop back. No, step up even, because they're scared of him when he's on the pitch.
But we know we couldn't. We know we basically had to spend that money, right? Like, the deal was already
agreed. That's just the most stupid deal on the planet, then, is it? Like, bringing a player on loan and then having to sign them. Like,
well, I think I imagine that's probably for our own financials. I.e., we didn't want to put it in last year's accounts, so you do it that way around. And if the thinking was, I mean, not every signing works out right, but we could have turned around and gone, bloody hell, Taylor Richards for $600,000, like, that was amazing. And yeah, I know that's just flipping kind of devil's advocate, but the theory was he could have been great in a Beale team, kind of being the chair Willock, then Richards option, rotating all the time, producing. And obviously, that's just gone the complete opposite way. Like, it hasn't worked out at all.
The problem with signings is that they have to. This is what I thought about Paul Smith. He has to have a good game really quickly, right? To win, to not just to get the fans on side. I think the longer you go without having that game or having those moments, I think you're in trouble. And I think that's what's happening to Taylor. I just think, you know, what?
We need that point where we go, yeah, but what about him versus X team? Like, yeah, that was the true player.
He's got to be in his squad for that. Like, I get he had personal issues last year, which is absolutely fine. Like, players go through personal issues, fine. The club said that, okay, that's fine. But where is he now? Like, you don't know anything. Is he injured? We don't know. Pre-season, he looked like a different beast. I was excited to see what he was going to bring us this season from pre-season. He looked interested, he looked fit. Now, nothing.
He did do that tackle. I said it last week. Remember that tackle at Oxford? They scored their first goal. And he watched it, and he completely wussed out of it. Got taken off at half time. We've not seen him since.
But the thing is, like, he's a creative player. He's not. Like, he's not a ball-winning midfielder. That's not what his game's about. That'd be like me getting cross with you for not going in for a 50-50. Ben, like, you're not being rude, but like, 5'5". You ain't going to go and win a 50-50 very easily, are you? But do you know what I mean? Like, I'm not expecting you to win a 50-50.
How big's Colback?
Yeah, but he's bigger than you. But do you know what I mean? But, like, you're not that type of player. Colback is. Richards isn't that kind of player. That's what I'm saying. So to not play again because you pulled out of one tackle in a pre-season friendly is a bit different. If it was Dizel not pulling out of the tackle when it was like him against the three players, fine. I completely understand, like, reprimanding him for that. But it wasn't in that situation. It wasn't a league game. It wasn't a cup game. It was a pre-season game. I just feel like he's been harshly treated by...
We don't know what else has gone on, though, do we? Feels like something's gone on. Same with Willett. I just feel like it's his way or the highway with Ainsworth. Like, this is my way. You're either in or out.
Like, that's fine if you get them out and you can bring in your own replacements that will play how you want them to play. That hasn't happened.
He doesn't even say that he's injured, does he? So he's not injured because he doesn't say that when the team lose, he doesn't even talk about him, does he? It's like a taboo topic at the moment, even when other
Yeah, and then like he doesn't play any minutes in the development team or in the squad, no. Whereas Adoma's week in week out starter for the development team at 37. But that is the opportunity to give him, to give Rich's minutes, to be like, okay, if you're coming back from a fitness concern or just to get you playing games, because he played in like B team games last year. So maybe something's gone on behind the scenes, and this is why, in terms of like something else has happened in his personal life. So like Angel's like, right, we're not going to mention it. Is he in any training photos? Maybe not. And the club are like, okay, well, we're not going to say anything.
So it goes back to this like smoke and mirrors from the club that just winds me up, where we're just not getting the full picture on why some of our players aren't in and around the team. Like the fan base would have a lot more sympathy for players if it was something personal. Like it, all they need to come out and say, there's personal issues ongoing, he won't be in the squad for X, Y, Z. And the fan base will go, fair enough. Hold that. Like, do you know what I mean? When it's nothing being said, everyone speculates and we're all kind of saying, is he injured? Is it this? Is it that? People are getting frustrated.
That's when we, like, fans will go to complete extremes, won't they, in terms of making up anything that could be really, really good, really bad, whatever. You kind of basically just need like a local journalist who has one of the pre-match interviews with Ainsworth on a Thursday or Friday to ask specifically about players and go, Taylor Richards hasn't been around the squad for a few weeks. Is he okay? What's going on? Just to get a direct answer.
Go on, George.
I was going to say, people just read too much into it. And I guess you could say QPR Twitter base, like with these, we're linked with someone, everyone's an expert within 2 hours. Like they just read into everything way too much. And if anything, that does back up the point of the club not telling us anything, doesn't help, because people just come up with all these theories and start hating on a player without knowing the full story.
And before you know it, everyone's fallen out of Ainsworth, taking the mick out of how he dresses. What was it? The Adson. Remember that rumour going around? laughing at him or something. Just quickly, Chair, the last day of the window was a bit crazy, wasn't it? I don't know if I even believe any of it, to be honest, but apparently Leicester were in, then they were out, then Leeds were in, then they were out, then they were back in. We rejected the $6 million bid, I think I saw at one point, with Geldart coming. $6 million is good money, isn't it? I mean, I can't see us turning it down. But then again, if it was that late in the window, I see why we wouldn't.
But this is what makes me question like our financial situation. Because if we are that strapped for cash, you'd take $6 million for Chair. Do you know what I mean? If we're that hard up and we're that worried about FFP, you take the $6 million this summer because the balance did help balance out the books. So if we're rejecting that, then surely our situation with money isn't as bad as the club or people make it out to be.
Well, he's got a contract, doesn't he? He's got a longer contract. He only has to have a good season this season. I don't think his value is going to go down next season. He's still going to be worth $6 million next season, unless he... it's for really bad happens this season, which could happen. That could happen with any player, right?
I don't think we're in a position to have said, oh no, you've come in at, 8 o'clock in the evening, so we can't spend that money now, because of that exact point you made, Dunk. Like, we desperately need money. That's what we've been told all of the time. And we know that is definitely true. Like, there's no disputing that fact. And what they must have said to Ainsworth was, look, you might lose chair. We'll look any of the players in the squad until midnight, 11 p.m, whatever it was, on that day. And you have to be prepared for that and you have to deal with it. So there couldn't have been a situation where it's like, oh, we've got this bid in. Gareth, are you okay to lose him? Because obviously he's going to say, well, no, I want to keep him. But you can't let that be the manager's decision. So then it makes me think, okay, were these bids actually real? Because... there's no way we could turn down $6 million, whatever time of night it was, not financially in a strong enough position. I get what you're saying, Ben, in terms of he'd hold his value and he's got 2 years left. But it's so difficult to turn down that money.
Well, I'm assuming the Leicester move didn't like materialise because they couldn't get rid of someone else.
Yeah, they couldn't get rid of that Ndidi in midfield.
Yeah.
That's what everyone else said.
Like, that's why I know. It's all like a domino effect. If Ndidi went, then they'd put a bid in for Chair and all that kind of stuff never happens. So
I don't see us rejecting a 6 million bid for Chair, and like, I think it's okay. I don't think we'll ever know whether a bid officially came in, because once again, all these people looking into how Chair didn't clap at a dinner to Armstrong.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
I think if a 6 million bid had come in, I think we would have taken it no matter what time. And I think, I don't know, I just think in the end, Leicester backed out, and then Leeds, I think that was just a load of BS from Twitter. But
yeah.
Or was it the same thing where they
back up to? You would have thought the club would have had, knowing that what you've just said, that there could be a good chance that one of them leaves. That if they do, this is what we'll do. This is the moves we'll make to make sure we get at least someone in. But then it's QPR, isn't it? Like, why would they think that? Why would they do? Like a common sense thing to do.
You're giving the board a lot of credit there, Ben.
Well, I don't know. It's just conversation. Like, someone comes in, who would be available at this short time? These are who would be available. These would come.
I guess it's like how far do the dominoes go down?
Well, yeah, who would want to come is the question. Who would want to come and play under Ainsworth? Like, if you're a Premier League club looking to loan out a young attacking midfielder to a Championship club, you don't look at a team whose manager has a reputation of a midfielder not touching it in a whole game, do you?
And we know during when the window, QPR's been a tough sell for Ainsworth. We know he's lost numerous targets. I think that's partly to do with the finances and partly to do with the position that Ainsworth paints us to be in. We've been choosing between someone like Hull, Birmingham, Cardiff, QPR.
As a Premier League club, you're not going to send a youngster to a relegation battle. Yeah, that's what it's being touted as. Do you know what I mean?
The thing that annoys me about Ainsworth, everything he said to us throughout pre-season after Watford, he's almost making us out to seem like we're Wickham. Like, he's putting us, like, I'm not trying to offend any Wickham fans or anything, but they're a smaller club than us. And he's almost, with all this expectation reset, he's doing what he does best and trying to just keep a club up. And I think trying to treat us like Wickham is just not the way to go, especially with our fan base.
Well, I think he's realised that, George.
Yeah, he realised it after Watford, yeah. But before that, like, what was the point in pre-season then? Why the whole pre-season have we knocked it long up to Cardbo from the development squad and then completely changed it around? It's just beyond me.
Well, that leads on to maybe something I wanted to bring up, and I'll set the scene and you lads can possibly chat through what side you're on. We've spoken to a lot of QPR fans, families, socials, friends and stuff. It feels like very much, I think everyone appreciates what Angel's trying to do and can start to see what he is trying to do. Not everyone's on board that I'm talking to. I don't know, I'm sure there'll be people listening that are and aren't. I guess from my perspective, I don't want to sit on the fence, but I am very much on it. But
are you going to get splinters on that fence?
I know, mate. I know. I am. I don't want to be on it. I want to be on one side. But I feel like if I do that, I'm going to quickly jump. It's going to be a small fence, very small fence. But I'm going to jump over, back over to the other side. I don't want to do that. I just want to be on one side and stay there. But I'm still, I can see what he's trying to do, right? And we've had some really good games. And, I'd have taken two wins from five at the start of the season. I think the signs have been pretty good that we've made. I agree with all the outs that have happened, you know. And I think Gareth's had a lot to do with all that, as he told us when we were there. But my worry is, when we get an injury, when we get some injuries, this squad is way for thin. And if we get an injury or two, like Cook going down injured, that could have ended a different way, because he was brilliant up until that point, you know, and you never know what you're going to get with Salter coming on, you know. So a two or three injuries in some key areas, and we really are in trouble, aren't we? And I don't know whether, I don't know, but it kind of feels like Gareth being happy with the squad. He obviously isn't, but him saying that, I don't know, would another manager have demanded more or tried to get more, you know, if there is, if any money there? But I'm worried when we don't play very well, or when teams figure out us out a little bit more, what's going to happen? I'm still a bit tense about it. So I'm on the fence, really, is what I'm trying to say. But I guess I know where both George and Dunk are. Chris, where are you, mate?
I'm leaning over that fence onto the Ainsworth Field of Dreams. I think he's done the turnaround since Watford, when everyone was like, oh my god, we are going to be like the worst team in the league, we are going to get relegated so fast, it's going to be horrific to watch. Like, that turnaround has been great. Like, all of the performances then since then, we've had positive things to say about them. We've won two out of the four, could have got something from the other games. He's got the buy-in from the squad. And to me, that is the key and the thing he's mentioned. As soon as he came in, he was like, that's what I need and that's what I build my teams on and my squads on. Getting buy-in, everybody on the same line of thinking, on the same path. So I appreciate the point you make about injuries. But to me, if we lose someone this season, it's less important than it was last season. Because even if it's our best player, the person who's going to replace him, quality-wise, they're going to be way worse. Let's say Chair gets injured for 3 months. The person who comes in and replaces him in the starting lineup is quality-wise going to be worse. But if they have the right attitude, or the other 10 players in the team are like, right, we have to step up now because we've lost him, but as a squad, we feel we can do it, that can take you places. And I'm not saying that place is anywhere close to like top six, top 10. I'm not. If it's 16th, then that's perfectly fine because of what our expectations were at the start of the season. But yeah, it really feels like he is getting there with what we need. And that's ultimately what we want to see. Yeah, we want to see like amazing football and the best 11 players we can in the league. Well, we're not going to see that. But can we get 11 players who want to kind of stereotypically like fight for the shirt and go till the last minute and give everything they've got? Like, we didn't have that last season. So if we can get that, that's a good position to be in.
I'm much more engaged in this team for sure, right, than I was last season. But then I don't know. It's difficult, isn't it? Because I was at this point last season. Do you know what I mean? Football changes so quickly.
Yeah.
You've sat here and you said that basically, name for name, everyone who's come in has been a better replacement than who's gone out. The only difference in this squad compared to last summer were the loan players. And actually, how much of an impact did the loan players make apart from, say, Ethan Laird at the start of the season?
You're saying that we've still got the same team?
Basically, with the changes we've come in, have been better than who's gone. Yeah, we've all agreed that. The players that have come in this summer are better than the ones that have gone.
But the rest of the squad,
apart from the loans, is basically the same. Yeah, as last summer. Last summer, we were expected to be pushing for playoffs. Is that purely because we had a couple of big player names on loan? Or is that because we had a better manager? Because all of a sudden this summer, the expectation level has gone 21st and we're happy.
Well, it's where the position you come from, right? So like in the season before, and well, like Warburton, we finished poorly, but we were in a good position until Feb. So people saw the trajectory that we've been on the last 3 years, i.e. steady improvement. Then you bring in a manager who's highly rated and plays really good football. Like, not that people would have looked at that Man United pre-season game, but some people would and gone, bloody hell, like this team might be like, look like they can do something in this. Oh no, that was the season before, wasn't it?
DiBaggio
when he scored their goal. But people were buying the Beal hype train,
But this is what I mean.
We were on that tradition. Hyped now us we're up. On the opposite.
I mean, Beal hyped us up and he got the players believing they were at a better level than they were. Whereas Ainsworth's level is, we will stay up. Let's just stay up. Let's just stay up. There's no expectation. As long as we finish 21st, that's all he's aiming for this season. And that'll be considered a good season because he's lowered expectations so badly that if anything does go wrong, we were one of the favourites for the drop anyway. To me, as much as he brings all this positivity, and I know he's saying, we can go higher than that, but he always comes back to, but the minimum is staying in the league.
But it is. And realism is, right? It's just realistic, right? And that's what we didn't like. You know, he's going to try and bring, what he's trying to do is bring players in to and them to know what's, you know, the chances are we are going to be in and around there, right? We might not be, but what I'm saying is if you bring players in on the basis that you won't be, you'll get what happened last season happen. You know, Ethan Laird, as soon as we started losing, didn't want to know. You know, Tyler Roberts even more so didn't want to know. You know, Johansson didn't want to know. Yeah, I mean, I could go on. Like, there's loads of players that just didn't, you know, Balogun. Yeah,
that wasn't so much due to the fact that we were losing games. That was because we lost a manager.
Yeah, but had we? Well, yeah, but if we were still riding, you know, if we were still up there, what do you think that they would have been back quicker? Do you think they would have put? But you know, they would have been more engaged.
If Beal hadn't left, do you think those players would have completely down tools for the rest of the season like they did?
No, because we would have been winning. That's
exactly that. But that's the point. That is the point. Yeah. But with a manager who had more faith in them to be able to achieve more. Like him putting his arms around all the lads and saying, we are going to go for playoffs this year. We are going to be pushing this year. They all kind of set their expectation levels higher. And they thought, yeah, we can push. He is going to get the best out of me. That's what I'm saying. Whereas with Ainsworth, it's like, well, let's just settle for what we can get.
But was it that continued motion of winning, i.e. under Beal, that's like, so every player then is turning up on a Saturday and being like, we can win today because we've kept winning. Then as soon as that dropped, we didn't have enough characters and enough people who were like, no, boys, we can bloody do this. We've lost three in a row, but we will recover. I mean, how many games did we not win in? Two in 27 or something? We had no one who was like, right, I'm going to bloody grab this team by the scruff of the neck and take them forward. Whereas this season, I have a lot more faith that if we were to go on a three-game losing run, we could turn it around and we wouldn't be going into the Saturday to be like, God, this is going to be another loss. Whereas last season, we were very much being like, God, this is going to be bad again. But we're turning up and we'll just see how it goes.
What people are forgetting is that when Ainsworth initially came in, I think we're 14th, weren't we? In like 9 points from the drop. That's the thing that annoys me. Everyone almost paints the picture that Ainsworth has come in, saved us from relegation last season, done a brilliant job. I just don't think he's got it tactically to do well. And I kind of disagree with the point of if we go on a losing streak, the players will turn it around. Because that, I just don't think that's the truth. Like, people say Ainsworth won over the squad. As soon as things start to go wrong like they did at Watford, I just can't see the squad back in Ainsworth. Like, and if you've the bench for us, like, you've got an 18-year-old Collie, yeah? Looks like a great player for the future. It's so unfair to be throwing him into a first-team scenario at his age. Bear in mind, he hasn't been out on loan anywhere. And you really think he's the sort of player who could turn it around when we're on a losing streak? I think
but we lost 4-0 against Watford and he did turn it around the week after. And we were praising how good we were.
Talk about setting a low bar. Brilliant. We didn't concede four goals in the first half an hour. Like, I know we went and beat Cardiff, but Cardiff...
But what else could he have done? We went and won.
There's rumours that there was a conversation or a meeting happened after the Watford defeat. And all of a sudden, everything that he did in pre-season and that Watford game got turned up on its head.
Now, so it's not.
And then all of a sudden, we've got players. We need to play this type of football. So who's actually come up with that?
I can guarantee you.
Because obviously they've had a committee that said, look, this was unacceptable to lose 4-0 the way we did on the opening day. I was there. After the second goal went in, Ainsworth's head was in his hands. He's on the side of the pitch just going, I haven't got a clue what I'm doing. I don't know what's going on. Why aren't the players doing what I've asked them to do? So how do we know it was Ainsworth that has come up with this magical solution and not, say, Dobbo or so like a group of like coaches all together, they've all sat down and they've all thrashed it out between themselves. I'm not saying that Ainsworth's not a bad manager. I'm not saying that he's going to be the next Pep. All I'm saying is I don't know how much we can fully say it was all down to him when all of a sudden he's had pre-season and his first game and then completely changed everything.
Is it ever down to just the manager, though, with that sort of stuff? And if your manager just goes, right, this is how we're going to play, this is where I want you to play, this is what I want everyone to coach, this is what position I want everyone to play. It is a, not a committee, but it is a coaching team that will, and if it is Dobbo, they come as a pair, don't they? You know, whether he's the face or not Ainsworth, you know, I can't agree that just because Ainsworth didn't think of this formation change means that he, I don't want him to get all the credit, but I also think that, you know, it's not just him, is it? It's,
I mean, this goes back to like even when we signed Beal and all the like Rangers fans were saying Beal was the mastermind behind Gerrard. Gerrard was just the puppet. Like, so you're saying how much then credit do you give the coaches or the manager? If you're saying like the coaches have a lot of responsibility, like you can't tell me it's like the better coaches than the world, say like the Pep Guardiolas. They're the ones going, oh no, go on, coaches, you take the session. He's there every single day. It's his tactics. A proper manager is in charge of his team. He doesn't leave it to his coaches.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I disagree. I think that your coaches are the ones that do the coaching, right? To a degree. Yeah.
Is he a coach or a manager then? Is he there just purely to be the man manager, the man motivator?
I'd say, yeah, bits and bobs. I think he's on the pitch. You know he's on the pitch coaching, so he does coach. But I don't, you know, not everything that a player does or doesn't do is because Ainsworth told them to do or not do that. Do you know what I mean?
But that's how football's going now, isn't it? It is so tactically coached. Like, there is less expression and less, I trust this group of players to do what they're supposed to do on the pitch. They're constantly being given instructions. Yeah. And the game is evolving so much to such a level that, like, tactics are changing completely and utterly mid-game. All the time, every single game.
I think it's difficult to... Don't forget what Ainsworth did last season because it's, you know, it wasn't great. But it wasn't great before he was there. And there was obviously something fundamentally wrong with the club at that time, right? We all agree that, surely. It wasn't... It's not like Ainsworth come into it. He came into a boat that was sinking. And, you know... I don't know. I feel like you give him the summer, you give him the start of the season, then you see how you do, right? Isn't that what we should?
Yeah, and we did give him the summer. We did give him the summer and we did give him pre-season. And it was exactly the same as what we saw last season. It's just, I completely agree with Duncan in the way that he said, I think it must have been someone else's decision to change the style of football. You can see it, can't you? The players go into it or people from above saying, listen, you've got to change your style, otherwise you're going to be gone. Like, I'm just not a fan. And you could give me all the stats in the world and try and convince me, but I'll just never be a fan of him.
What would he need to do to make you a fan?
I don't know. Well, obviously...
Top six?
That's just obvious.
Are you sure?
I just always think that he's not... got the tactical and football mind to have it at this level. And I think just lowering our expectations was just such a downer before the season even started. Like, have you ever gone into a season being so negative about the first game of this, like the first game? It's just, I don't know. My mind will never change on him, sadly, unless he proves me completely wrong.
No, I'll be honest. Yeah, this was the most negative I've gone in a season, but that was still realistic for where we were. If we're the third favourites for relegation, the whole market and the whole footballing world is telling us we're not a good team.
Yeah, but what other manager publicly comes out and says that though? Like you've never seen any other manager come out and say before the season's almost like even started saying, "Oh, we're favourites for relegation. Don't expect much." It's just dampening our expectations before it's even started. And I know it's realistic, but the stuff that he's telling us, he's going to be telling the players, and the players are just going to be negative before he even starts.
But do we think that's actually different? Do we think what he tells us is one thing, and inside the training ground, it is really positive? Because it's in. He's really positive.
Have you ever listened to him?
Yeah, go on.
Have you listened to him do another press conference with anyone outside of our actual official club.
Like when Talk Sport, when he said he was scared of the league because it's so many big teams.
Yeah, all right. That's not going to happen. But I've seen, I've listened to a few times that he's spoken in the media, and he's a bit more relaxed and chilled, and you don't get that fan Ainsworth that comes out of him, you know, that I've won a ticket to manage the club kind of thing. I do agree, George, that's the one that I do agree with. His interviews really do frustrate me, and they will frustrate me even more when we lose. I always find like they, and that's what will go against him. If we do start losing and the form starts dipping, I think that won't help him if he keeps betraying that in his post and pre-match interviews.
The thing is, he's trying to build the siege mentality, and I get that. He's trying to say to the lads, look, everyone thinks we're going to go down. Everyone thinks we're this terrible team. Like last season, the form fell off. We're all doing it together, all of us together. Like our spirit and our team effort will get us over the line. I get that's what he's trying to do. That's what his job is doing. Okay? But that will only work for so long. Do you know what I mean? There's only so much you can say to a person, you're the best you're going to be today, you're the best you're going to be today, without that person can't keep performing to it. Like Andre Zell is not going to score a worldie every other week like he did against Borough. Like that was that's his first goal for the club. I reckon he'll have another 100 shots before he scores again. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, there's only so much you can pick a player up for them to believe it, that they are going to be strong enough and this team is going to be strong enough.
I think it's 11.
When the wheels fall off, and potentially they do, and if we have an injury crisis, they do, that's when I wonder how he's going to motivate this team.
But what's he got to do then for you to not? Because if you take realism in and what he's got from a squad perspective, I think that the 11 that we've, the first 11, 12, 13 players we've got are more than capable of staying in this league. So, you know, but.
Yeah, but. We can have 9 subs on the bench and we can make 5. It's not about the first 11 anymore. And this is what I got, like I said, like it annoyed me the other week, his comment, oh, I'm happy with the squad I've got. We have no bench. We can't really change a game if we're 1-0 down. Like George said, you're bringing on Ryan Colley. He's 18 years old. Being thrown in, like we said last week, back at Southampton, anyone else, my senior striker, would have taken a chance. And that's what we don't have. We don't have a bench.
Yeah, but he can only play what he's got. He knows he needs players. Come on, man. You can't live that squad and know
that. That's the thing. I don't think he does. I generally think when he says he's happy with the squad, I honestly think he is. I think
he said he's so happy to be actually finally managing the club. Like, but why now when he was the last five, six years when he was at Wickham and getting them up top of the table, getting him into playoffs and all that? Why wasn't he good enough then when we had to change of manager?
Or wasn't that the reason, like, Les left because he never
saw his transfer targets. Yeah, well, that was
because like Les didn't want Ainsworth. Well, again, this is like rumor and pure speculation, but we can talk about it. If it's that Ferdinand didn't want Ainsworth, he was never going to bring him in. Got to the point where it's almost probably possibly forced upon him that it's like, right, we haven't got any other choice now. It's Ainsworth, and Les is like, nah, I'm gone in the summer then. I don't think it's a coincidence anymore.
Then that's the problem. Like, what annoys me the most is, like, we had a director of football and they didn't do his job properly. And now we've got a manager who's taking over what seems to be taking over full control of the club. But then what happens if Ainsworth is a massive success but gets poached by another club because he's done so well for us? Or B, it doesn't go work well and we lose him. And who are we bringing in then? And are they going to have the full reign of the club? Or has Ainsworth got that because he's a fan favourite, he played for the club? Like, that's what worries me long term more than anything. Short term, I think he could keep us in the league, which is brilliant. But long term, he's not going to get us into playoffs, realistically, in my opinion.
No, we'll agree with you there. I'm not expecting him to turn us into a playoff team. I think this league is too difficult for that. The director of football thing is weird. And I wouldn't expect us to hear anything about it. You don't get like a report every week, whatever, about so-and-so's been interviewed for this role. But it does make me think, are the club just going to like try and get away with not having one this season? Like, it's a bit weird.
When we spoke to him, when we went to the club, he didn't seem to me like we needed one, or that he thought that we didn't need one, or that we could get by without one. And But I don't think it's a massive cost saver as well, right? I think Les was on quite a bit good money, so you know, with FFP and where it is, but
yeah. I mean, there's certain managers who will never like working under a director of football, right? Like Chris Wilder is one of them. One of the best championship managers has been, or football league managers been in a long time. Didn't, obviously got let go from Borough because he didn't like and get on with the director of football. So there will be those mentality, those managers who are like, no, I don't want one. Because it kind of feels as if there's someone like always peering over your shoulder. And that's why the relationship between those two people and those two roles has to be, they have to be in sync. They have to be not quite best mates, but like work together superbly for it to be successful.
I think it's like when we spoke to Gareth at the training ground, and he's like, I messaged Les and was like, can I have your office? It's the best office here. Part of me was like, is that like a little bit of a, I'm having your office? Like, I don't want Nick Beale's or Critchie's office. I want your office. Is that a bit like, I'm the main man. I'm the one who's in charge. Do you know what I mean? It kind of gives off that little bit of a vibe.
Yeah, I can't imagine Les reading that message in the best manner. We don't know what their relationship was like, right?
Yeah.
But if it was a bit strenuous, like, you're not going to appreciate that message from the person who's, not, quote unquote, not taking your job, but might have some of those responsibilities.
We're going to be heavy. I think we're going to need Armstrong. We're going to need some few players to really turn up this season. I think, I think Armstrong's one. I thought on Saturday he seemed a lot more disciplined. He wasn't charging around the pitch for 60 minutes, just running down and running into the keeper and making silly fouls. He seemed a lot more reserved. It was kind of a bit like, you want him to do that still, but you kind of got to appreciate that he needs to reserve his energy. But he was much better in separate.
Unleash the beast, don't tame him.
Yeah, but if you, he's knackered after 60 minutes, mate.
He's got a cramp after 60 minutes.
Yeah, but he's getting sent off, or he's getting sent off.
But I think that's what worries me.
That's back to the squad depth. Like, if you think about it, if we had another striker in, you could put him on the bench and bring him on after 60 minutes and do what he did, use to scare teams when everyone else is absolutely out of their feet. That's why you needed like another nippy striker so the defence could drop back. I just think it's just a case again of like squad depth, because like Armstrong, say he goes away to the Ireland under 21s, gets injured, Dykes gets injured, who are we left with? What strikers have we got? Like, what we got no one. Like, we'll probably bring like a Chris Martin back on a free, but even then, that's just going backwards to Ainsworth's former style of football, because Martin can't play no passing or running in behind.
Can I say, if those two injuries happen, Chris Martin will be at the training ground before it opens.
Yeah.
Just waiting to be like, I've got my kit on, boys, I'm here.
He's had no pre-season. Like, we need him now. We need to be in the training ground now, getting fit.
I mean, George, I understand what you're saying. I also do think, though, that where do you get these... Dykes is going to be our number one striker. I think it's evident. It has been. Like, if you bring in another striker, who's going to want to play second, third fiddle out there, even on loan? What club's going to send a striker out on loan to be third choice?
Yeah,
not going to play. Why would we waste money on him? And also, if you're going to bring in a youth striker, which we could do from one of the, you know, someone in the Premier League, like an under 21 striker, I said this last week, I don't see the point in it. I think they may or may not be half decent, but getting Ryan Colley and Sinclair more minutes in their legs, it's only going to benefit us next season, developing our own players. And we I know what you're saying. If we go down, we could have brought one in, fine. But what happens if we stay up this season and they've both played sort of 10, 20, 30 games? We'll be better for it next season.
No, that's the thing. I think we will stay up. I think we confidently would stay up with the 12, 13 we have. It's just, it's QPR. There's going to be an injury crisis. and that's just my worry. Like, and then when that happens, I don't think the players will react to Ainsworth. And I think it'll just be a sinking ship as it was back end of last season.
Well, I think the Gareth Ainsworth, let's leave it on that. I mean, time will tell. I think we'll see. Maybe we'll come back and chat about this. You see, a couple of losses and the whole world changes, doesn't it, in football? You know,
exactly. Like, we could win the next three games and I'll be like peeping over that fence.
Oh, then you'll be.
I'll be peeping. I won't be on it. I won't be on it. I'll be peeping to see what's going on. But do you know what I mean? But then
so what's we could lose three games.
We could lose the next three games, and you'll be back on my side.
I know we could.
Getting your deck chair out, sitting down.
Not on any side yet.
But that's it. We're football fans. And we're
I think that's the best summary. Yeah.
Just quickly, I saw Mickey B. I know you've probably all seen it struggling. I just love it when Rangers lose. Now, I don't know if anyone's the same. Absolutely love it, and it's funny that they've already managers being linked there, and he's already his fans have completely. I saw a protest. They're doing a protest. I don't know if anyone saw it.
Oh God!
Feel out protest.
That's what happens, isn't it? When you appoint a snaky manager.
Yeah. It's all the comments being like, all he ever did was put out Gerard's training cones. 12 months, how many months ago? 12 months ago, this exact same fan base were like, he is the man. Gerard did absolutely nothing. Yeah. He was the brains behind everything. If only we had him back now, everyone's suddenly like, oh, we never should have got rid of Van Bronckhorst. And like, what we did was a joke. Yeah, but again, it goes back to exactly what you said, Dunk. Football fans are fickle. We will change as quickly as you possibly can. But as long as you're there on the Saturday to watch and support and you're positive at 3 o'clock, then that's the point, right?
If we're not arguing on Twitter after the game that we've won because certain fans thought we were going to lose, what's the point in it? Like, do you know what I mean? I love scrolling through Twitter on a Saturday after we've won because certain fans are giving it a big hug because we've won. Other fans are like, yeah, but we won, didn't play well. Like, it's just, we still won, lads. Happy days. We're all going to work on Monday buzzing. That's it.
All the pro aids will have come out, don't they? And then all we lose, and all the other, it's the same every time, isn't it? Just quickly, one thing I did want to just quickly mention is Ainsworth really needs to get a win in these next two home, at least one win in these next two games. He's got to sort this home form out because we can't sustain the current away form. We've won 4 out of 6. I just find it difficult that you were going to sustain that throughout the season. So he really needs to sort this home form out, doesn't he? I don't know. That's something that he has to sort out, or as Doug said, his coaching team or his committee.
Yeah, 100%. We can't have, the away wins are great, but you want to win at home when there's, 15,000, 16,000 of us there. If you're just winning away, it's in front of whatever great support we've taken away, then a majority of the fan base aren't seeing us win. And that's big. That has long-term effects. The club are always on about that. How do we bring more, or how do you make more young fans into QPR fans when they've got all these options? Well, the solution is making it fun at home and winning and seeing good results, good energy, etc.
Yeah, we'll preview the games next week, but Sunday's not going to be easy, is it? Quickly, then, I just want a quick question to end it. Dunk, go first. I want to know one thing that you're so far this season that you're really happy and positive about, and then one thing that you're particularly concerned about or you think that could be a concern or a negative?
Absolutely buzzing that Sinclair is getting as many minutes as he is, and he got his goal and he's looking like a real threat for us. I'm made up for the lad, and I can't wait for him to like bang 10 goals in for us this season, hopefully. Negative, it's just a lack of investment in the squad, really. That's all I can go on, really. I still feel we're a bit short in certain areas, but like I know that our hands are tied. I can't really go too much on that, but that's my negative.
George?
I'd probably say my positive is seeing the experience of Steve Cook and Colbatt, and I guess you could say Begovic as well in the team. Like, I think ever since they've come in, they've looked assured, they've looked good. Like, the amount of tackles Cook and Colbach have been putting in has been immense, and I feel like they're two real good additions. Bear in mind, we played Gubbins at the back first game of the season, so can only be positive about that. And negatives, I'd probably say, similar to Dunk, squad depth and the worry about an injury crisis incoming, and as a whole, Ainsworth. I'll leave it on that.
Chris, please. Positive
would be seeing a player like Ryan Colley come through. We've talked for ages about how we don't feel we've got anything from the academy. we've now got someone that a lot of players, or sorry, a lot of fans probably knew, had heard of once or twice last season. Now he's full part of the squad, really often, looked very bright, and should get a decent amount of minutes this season. So that pathway is open. Negative would be related around Chris Willock, and not quite sure how many times we'll get to see him in chair playing together this season and looking kind of at their best, whether that's Willock injury related or how we fit them both in. But yeah, we could chat in a month and that could be very different.
Yeah. Positive is going to be Paul Smith, I think, really. Aside from a couple of whatever you guys have said, Sinclair was one. It's good to see him come back and do well. I think I want him to do well. I like him. I think he could be good if we use him right. I just love a bit of pace. I've always said that on this pod. Like, we've been crying out for it for years. I'll leave the negatives to you guys.
Hey, look at you. Get off that fence.
Right, lads, nice one. Thanks for joining. Enjoy the win and the rest of the international break. And we'll be back next week. Yours.
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 Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.